Chapter 11, Influencer Marketing. In this chapter, I talk about where the big bucks are going next, the two biggest influencer opportunities, and how up-and-coming influencers can get advertiser attention. We all know that the thank you economy is based on the power of word of mouth. With one click, or tweet, or share, or favorite, or any number of other social digital acts, consumers' messages can be spread and their voice amplified well beyond the boundaries of their neighborhoods or even the industries where they work. And that's just the ordinary Joes who aren't actually trying to make a name for themselves. There are others, of course, whose word of mouth is even more valuable. These are the people who put in the hustle, celebrities, for sure, and experts in their fields, but also those people who aren't celebrities in the traditional sense and yet who are also entertaining, different, or funny, and so good at creating native content, whether it's 6-second Vine videos or pithy tweets, or insightful blog posts, they develop a disproportionate effect on pop culture and opinion. Marketing today is about going where the eyeballs go. And the eyeballs are all in on these influencers. Will they see your brand there? You're missing out if they're not. I've known for a long time that one person's passion and personality could carry a brand, especially via video. Companies were reaching out to me as early as 2006, asking if I would integrate their products into Wine Library TV. I didn't take their offers because I wasn't yet sure what the negative side effects might be. And though $5,000 was a nice sum, I was making enough money that it didn't seem worth it at the time. Now, the practice has become commonplace and acceptable. I'm considering getting sponsors for Ask Gary Vee Show. Can you imagine? Ask Gary Vee Show is brought to you by the New York Jets. Back in 2009, when I first wrote about influencer marketing in Crush It, people were still debating whether YouTube was really a major platform. Today, YouTube is the video platform of our society, with Facebook Video kind of on its heels, like I said earlier. Influencer marketing is an exploding category. Yet, for all the thousands of dollars being paid to people to post things on social, it is still grossly underpriced in the market. I will always say that I don't like making predictions, but I'm comfortable predicting that whatever the dollar amount influencers are being paid to market services and products in 2016, that money will be dwarfed by 2019. Corporations are going to give massive amounts of money to individuals to help bring awareness on platforms like Snapchat and Instagram, and plenty more that don't exist yet. When I first advocated for this kind of marketing, people were still skeptical of the idea that everyone and anyone could develop a personal brand. It was weird. Now, it's becoming the norm. Every 14-year-old knows that if she can get enough followers on Instagram, companies will send her free stuff and pay her to put pictures of products in her feed. And not one 14-year-old watching her is going to think badly of her doing it. You'll see, influencer marketing is going to be one of the advertising bedrocks of the next decade. I believe in this form of marketing so much that in May 2013, I started a talent agency with Jerome Jarre called Grape Story to represent star storytellers on Vine and Snapchat. Since then, I've watched the careers of Logan Paul, Marcus Johns, King Botch, Lele Pons, Nash Greer, and Sean Doris explode, turning them from unknowns into bigger stars to the average 14-year-old than Rihanna. If you're 25 years old or older, these names may not mean anything to you. But for anyone ages 14 to 24, these have been household names for well over 18 months.
Hi, this is Casey Neistat, and I am hiding in my wife's closet with my head in her dresses, trying to get as clear of audio as I can as I record these questions. Where do you see the biggest untapped opportunities in the social media influence space? Where's the next big thing coming?
Casey, your real character, thanks so much for reading. For anybody that doesn't know, Casey's one of the great influencers in our society and a great co-founder of something called Beam and just pushing the envelope, so I'm really happy to have you, brother. So I think the place to really focus on is retail. Right now, a lot of influencers are getting paid for awareness, right? Make a piece of content, push it out to your community, but I think the place where they're gonna make a lot more money is when they start endorsing products or creating products for themselves. As they amass these huge audiences, for example, if I created a wine glass that was a signature Gary Vaynerchuk wine glass in 2011, I think was my height, I would have sold a lot and made a lot of money. And so I think Casey, who's a photographer, if he came out with his own camera, like a $30 disposable, cool 2017 disposable camera, he would sell hundreds of thousands and make a lot of profit. So retail, 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 not just advertising.
How do you define influencer?
Look, at some level, I define influencer as anybody who can have a following that says something and people then take action, right? Now, some of us, we can say, go here, and two people will show up. And other people, for example, DJ Khaled, in an hour can say, fans, meet me downstairs on Snapchat, and literally thousands of people show up. So your influence power varies, but at this point, I pretty much default into anybody that has a social network and has a profile is an influencer. Clearly, the way the market defines it is having enough mass to matter to their business. And so it's very, very intriguing to watch all of us be pushed into the influencer game, and you're more than welcome not to. Hide your account, don't sign up in the first place. There's one other little bullet point I'd like to mention to add value to the conversation is, an influencer can be somebody who's influential in a very narrow space, right? So you don't have to be Tom Cruise of the 80s. You may be a mechanic that is very smart and clever and storytells great on Instagram, and you could be huge to the, you know, auto industry, but mean nothing to anybody else in the world. So let's remember that part as well.
Now that you're running an influencer space with Grape Story, what are the biggest challenges you're facing in scaling the business model? And which brands are doing a good job using influencers in social channels?
I think at this point, at the time when I took this on the show, there weren't that many brands, but literally everybody's doing influencer marketing. So I'm not spending enough time really paying attention at this point to really tell you who's doing it well. Now the business has shifted. Jerome went on to do other things. We've kind of actually shut down Grape Story at this point, and now we have an influencer media department within VaynerMedia. So the problem with the business was it was hard to scale because these kids got famous and they started going to bigger talent agencies because they still do want to do television and things of that nature. And so we wanted to end up representing everybody instead of representing a few, and that's where I shifted the business.
What's the difference between influencer marketing and product placement?
The education of the person executing the strategy of influencer marketing. For example, product placement is a tactic within influencer marketing. You can actually have a bottled water. As a matter of fact, a water company reached out to me during Wine Library TV and said, hey, why don't you put your water on the table and we'll give you a couple of bucks. That's product placement. The other thing you could do is integrate full stories. They could take over your account. You could have them at events and collect content. There's a lot of executions you can do with that influencer. One of them happens to be you putting your product in their day in and day out content.
What is the role of influencers in my overall media strategy? And how do I evaluate them relative to other marketing channels?
Well, this is the billion-dollar question. I mean, everybody's struggling with the notion of how is my media mix being evaluated. When you're running television and direct mail and radio and outdoor media and social media and digital banner and Google AdWords and influencers and event marketing, how do you really figure this out? You don't, unless you create very siloed executions with very direct ways to figure it out. Pepsi can't do that. Their product sells in stores. They don't know exactly how that person was influenced. And hence now why you have a big, big, big advertising industry where there's a lot of weirdness going on and a lot of assumptions that are not true. I think the percentage of spend against influencers needs to grow dramatically for most big companies in the world. And even for the people sitting here who have a very small company, you have a Raspberry Jam or you have a $200 ebook that you're selling, other people endorsing your products really works. And so it's just awareness. It's no different than any other media. And so what you have to do is make sure it doesn't feel like they're spamming their audience, because then you get the negative kind of vibe from that. But I'm a very big believer that it's underpriced. Clearly, it has a whole chapter in my book. I think it should be a bigger part of the percentage of your marketing than you think. And evaluating it, really, if you're lucky enough to be on both sides, omnichannel, all the way through, where you can actually see the sale. For example, wine library, no problem. Give somebody a bottle of wine, pay them to endorse it, link out to winelibrary.com, we can see it. Like, there's no debate. But again, for a soda company, you can't. And so you evaluate it the best you can with the best analytics and reporting that your organization has.
How do I evaluate the cost of an influencer on a case-by-case basis?
So this is very difficult. You need context. It's actually why I've integrated it into VaynerMedia so that we can actually base a CPM, cost per thousand impressions, on it and create a baseline for people to go off of. But the truth is you can't, because you can't just go on awareness. You need to think about effectiveness. It makes me think about when luxury.com had 1 million emails for me back in the day for Wine Library in 1997. I thought my business was going to explode when I bought an ad on it. And meanwhile, they sent it and nobody cared and there was no depth and nobody really bought. And I was crushed and overpaid for 1 million open emails, but got no click-throughs. Same with an influencer. If you have an influencer who has 1,000 people following them, but 800 of them actually buy your peanut butter, and then you go to another one and they've got 40,000, and then they put out a post and only 28 buy them, well, who did you like? You evaluate based on the results. The problem is most of us don't have a machine that allows us to quantify the results, because we don't have the engine that sells the product unless we are a retailer. So at the end of the day, you try to put things in a position. For example, what if you have an influencer, if you own 30 stores, only market people to a specific location, and you see if that location is doing better than the other locations or better than it has historically done. The problem with most marketers and business people is they don't know how to score. They score how many likes, they score how many people follow them, they don't score the results. Force your business into a results-driven play with an influencer, and then you treat it like you treat direct mail or any other thing that you do in marketing. You just look at the actual results.
My brand doesn't even have a Vine account. Should Vine be a platform I consider if it's not somewhere we're already active for brand development?
You should be anywhere where your customer is. So if you believe that the 13 to 27-year-old demo that still remains on Vine, which is smaller than it used to be, but is still there, is marketable and you can get them and they can drive your business, well, then you should be there. At the end of the day, that's no different than should we be in the Yellow Pages. I mean, who in the world thinks the Yellow Pages is a good idea? I bet you there's some company that markets to 75 to 95-year-olds that probably is still getting real results from the Yellow Pages. Wherever your audience is, you should be, especially if it's underpriced. Now, that said, when this was asked, Vine was bigger. It's declining. The attention's waning from it. So you've got to keep those factors in play always.
When you contract an influencer, do you instruct them to continue to make the kind of content your brand is already making? Or should you let them speak with their own voice and on their own terms?
Number two. I mean, you're paying them because they did something right. Their audience likes the way they do it. For some of you classic marketers or just people of the world, remember how Howard Stern read his commercials? It wasn't exactly like the conservative disc jockey in middle America. You bought Howard for Howard, and you let Howard have a little fun with your brand. Same exact thing. It's literally disc jockey mentality. If you make them do something that's not native to them, everybody's going to sniff it from 1 million miles away, and it's going to come across really lame, and you'll probably spend money to suck. And so let these people do what they do. You've made the decision, you believe in them. Don't get conservative at the last minute.
Can an influencer on Vine, Snapchat, or Instagram drive app downloads given the platform limitations against linking out? How can we prove that there's content directly affecting the KPI?
KPI, key performance indicator. It's a business term that allows people to understand, is it working? Like, this is how we measure success. This is what we're going for. Think of it as the goal. The answer is, of course, they have massive attention. As a matter of fact, one of the best arbitrages in the world for app downloads is influencers. The way you can do it is you can make your product, if you own the app, have a code maybe to create a special feature. And then you can give those influencers that code and say, go download this app and use Selena as a code. And not that they may get an extra gift. You might not be charging. It might be a free app, but it's a way for you to track it. Or don't do any other advertising for 30 days. Stop cold, wait 30 days, and then allow that influencer to plug and then see what's happening. See if you get a spike. So it's actually very easy to measure if you're willing to measure and use a little common sense.
Hi, Gary Vaynerchuk. This is Philip Guinea from Berkshire Academy. Now, my question is, what is the tactical and strategic pathway to become an influencer? I am all in when it comes to all forms of marketing. How do I connect with real influencers, leverage their brand equity, or grow my own?
Well, first of all, asking how to become an influencer is like asking me, how do I become a star? The answer is have talent, you know, and be a star and be an influencer, meaning you've got to pump out content. You've got to bring it on the platform. You've got to be there first or early. I mean, at the end of the day, you can always pop on YouTube or Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram, but you got to be great. And you got to be greater once the supply and demand issues kick in, right? Because the land grab in the beginning is quite special. I think at the end of the day, it's much harder to become the next big influencer. For example, fuck Jerry or the fat Jewish on Instagram. You're not going to become the next that because they land grabbed, they filled that void. You have to fill a different void, or you need to be the joker on the next kind of platform. And so it's very basic. Do you have the skills? Did you move fast enough to land grab during that time? And did you bring value to your audience to maintain that early lead? You know what? I don't talk about this a lot. There was a lot of other Twitter and YouTube celebrity alikes when I was there. They've all faded away. They didn't have the chops. They were there early. They grabbed an early audience, but then they couldn't bring it. And so their lifespan was only as good as their talent allowed them to be. So I think the key two metrics are speed on which you get on these platforms, and two, do you actually have the talent to be an influencer? There's one other little thing, a crap load of work. The maintaining of content and value and information day in and day out, day in and day out, day in and day out.